Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with James Hawkins. How are you, James?
I'm great, thanks, Chris.
Okay, we're still here in Hawkins Brothers Finding This Wine. And I thought we'd have a bit of a chat about the English wines you stock, and a little bit of a chat about generally the English wine scenes. Simon was holding up a sign just recently, trying to get your attention. What was the sign saying?
Saying we've got the largest selection of award-winning English
wines. Last week you mentioned the Independent English Wine Awards.
Yeah.
Is that run by, who's that run by? Is that the UKVA or?
No, that's a... It is, as the name suggests, an independent award. It's run by a guy called Alex Taylor. He does it in Bristol. It'll be the second one in March this year.
All right. You've got the combined into the UKVA and English Wine Producers, which I've forgotten their name.
It did become UKWP, but now it's become WineGB.
WineGP. Oh, they've changed the name again.
Yes.
WineGP. Okay, so you've got WineGB who do their own awards.
Yep.
And now you've also got the Independent
English Wine Awards
as well. Okay. And you've also got the International Wine Spirit Competition, International Wine Challenge as well.
So there's Decanter.
Decanter. Yeah. So there's a few of them out there now that the English wine scene can enter.
Yeah.
And your awards, I presume you've got, I've seen an IWC award sticker on some of them and a couple of IWC awards. And
yeah. I mean, a lot of people just don't bother putting the stickers on because...
You've got to buy them.
You've got to buy them for one thing. And quite a lot of these bottles would be plastered in stickers because they've won so many awards.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people just want to put the gold ones on anyway.
Yeah, although good silver. Silver and gold are the awards that count. Everything else is rubbish. You know, you've won a bronze. What does that tell you? That tells you it's not bad.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple of wineries that I recognize. Gasbourne. I recognize, let's have a look. You've got Gasbourne, you've got Aubrey, which just because I've been there.
Yep.
Let's have a look. Hettingley, I've heard of, but I don't really know too well.
Yeah, they're over in Hampshire.
Jinklin Place, I've heard about and I've tried. Hindley, I know a wee bit about. You've got Bluebell, but I can't see it there. Or you've said.
Bluebell and. Bluebell is the name of the vineyard and Hindleap is the name of the wine.
That's everywhere.
Yeah, they changed their branding to Hindleap.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
When was that?
Probably about a year ago.
Well, it just goes to show I didn't make it to the English trade tasting last year, so that'll be why I haven't seen it. What else? And that's about it, really. There's quite a few of vineyards that I don't really know and I haven't covered in the show. So can we just talk a wee bit about some of them? Maybe start with Greyfriars?
Greyfriars, yep. Well, Greyfriars is 3 miles from here on the Hog's Back.
Yep. The Hog's Back's the bit between the sort of the clay bits of London and then getting into the limestone hills.
It's the North Downs. It's a chalk escarpment with the A31 running along the top of it.
That's right.
But yeah, wonderful chalk slopes there. They've got about 50 acres of vines there. Run by the Wagstaff family.
Okay, 50 Lovely acres people. Is a decent-sized winery.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and they're really going for it. I mean, there's been a vineyard on the site since 1989, I believe, but it was only small, but the Wagstaff staffs bought it in 2010 and planted an awful lot more.
Okay, so they've grown quite a lot recently.
Since 2010.
Okay. What sort of range do they have? You've got their sparklers.
They have a Blanc de Blanc and a Rosé and a Classic Cuvée. They sometimes make a Sparkling Sauvignon. They also make a Still Rosé and a Still Pinot Gris.
Oh, okay. You start to see a bit of Pinot Gris coming out, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, because maybe 3-4 years ago, I never really saw Pinot Gris at all. And now I'm starting to see a few Pinot Gris.
I mean, it's quite tricky to grow in this country, but there are a few people.
What, ripeness or disease pressure?
A bit of both, really. Certainly ripeness. I mean, Fox and Fox make a Blanc de Blanc, which is pure Pinot Gris, called Inspiration, which is pretty unusual. They're over in East Sussex, Mayfield.
A lot of people don't realise Pinot Gris is a permitted champagne grape.
Absolutely. Well, there are, you know, 7 great varieties permitted in Champagne, but 98% of them are the 3 classic grapes.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to plant the others anymore.
Aren't you?
No, there's a ban. You're only allowed to plant the 3 classics now. So
really?
You're allowed to make Champagne from Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc and Arbane and all those other ones, but you're not allowed to plant them.
Ah.
So they'll be slowly dying out over time.
Ah. Okay.
So Fox and Fox, I don't know them either. So where are they and what are they doing?
Well, they are doing different stuff. They make a lovely Blanc de Noir called Tradition. They make a rich, deep rosé called Midnight. What else do they do? They've got their entry-level classic cuvée called Mosaic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where are they based?
Yeah, they're based in Mayfield in East Sussex.
East Sussex. I don't know Mayfield.
It's apparently there's 90 meters of clay there, but so are they? It's an interesting place to.
They're
to
growing grow on clay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting because normally people chalk's good because of drainage, and clay's bad normally in wet environments. Like yeah. Clay makes really nice rich wines, but if you're in a wet environment, it can be a little bit problematic with your tractors. Yeah. And
well, I think they're maintenance. Probably very careful how they manage their vineyards.
Yeah, they'd have to be particularly careful or else. You've got Whiston, which is Dermot Sugrue's winery.
Yep.
Well, it's not his winery. He's the winemaker there.
He's the winemaker, yeah.
He used to be the winemaker at Knighton. But
he left in 2006 to start Whiston, I believe, with the Goring family.
He was my very first interview for the show.
Well, he's a lovely guy, a real live wire.
Yeah.
Always has something to say. Yeah, there's we have their multi award winning Brut Reserve and their Blanc de Blanc at the moment, and their non vintage rosé.
Do you find people brand aware when they're coming to shop here? Do you know people go, oh, Whiston, I've heard of them, or maybe Gusbourne or something like that? Or do you find that it's very much your guidance towards what?
Some people are brand aware, but a lot of people don't know, and they will ask for guidance, which is why we're here. We know these people, we know the wines, and we can. Anybody who wants to know anything, we can tell them.
You mentioned that there's a Pinot Gris-based sparkling wine. One of the things I've been sort of exploring over the wee while is the autolytic flavours you get in sparkling wines appear to be quite different depending on the grape variety that's being used as the base.
Yeah.
Before we do that, autolytic flavours are the flavours that the wine develops when the wine's lying on the dead yeast as it decomposes during the ageing process.
Absolutely.
And I was just wondering how you've found some of the, like you get Sauvignon Blanc is made into sparkling wines in the UK, Pinot Gris, as you mentioned, etc. Do you find the autolytic flavours become more grape dependent? Because you do get different types of autolytic flavour.
I don't know the answer to that one, I have to say.
Okay. No, that's fine. It's just that if you look at, say, a Carver that's made with the traditional grapes, not Chardonnay,
yeah.
And then you look at a Chardonnay-dominated Carver, the aroma profiles of a Chardonnay-dominated Carver is quite similar to a Champagne. You might get different structure of the wine, but the autolytic flavours are similar. But the traditional Carvers have a almost like a burnt rubber smell to them, which you don't get on the more modern Chardonnay-driven ones.
Okay.
And then you see a slightly different thing, like more of a acetaldehyde flavour with some of the other English sparkling wines that aren't traditionally, like Sauvignon Blanc type of thing, can give that slightly acetic acid type of smell.
Sure.
Which I'm just sort of exploring because, you probably drink more English sparkling wine than I do. And I was just wondering if you'd experienced that or...
Not really, no.
Simon, your brother, is keen to answer this one, so we'll let him jump in on this. How are you, Simon?
Yeah, very well indeed. Thanks, Chris. Nice to see you. Hello, everybody. Basically, I think that the winemaker has more influence on the flavour profile of the wine than the grapes do. I mean, I've tried, obviously, all of the wines in the shop. It was a terrible job. But the variety in flavour profile seems to be dependent on the winemaker rather than the grapes and so how they process the wines.
All right. Okay, that makes... Maybe. All right. I don't know. I'm asking the question because I don't know the answer. I think I have to. I think when I get the English trade tasting this year, I might actually do a little wee study on that.
Yeah. Ask the winemakers the difficult questions.
Yeah. When punters come in, which wineries do they really recognise the most?
Well, often Whiston, Greyfriars, because it's
local.
Oh,
and it's quite big.
Yeah. But it depends on where they're from in the country, and people will often recognize their local brand because it's the nearest vineyard to them. I mean, if you come from Petworth, you'll probably recognize Upperton and Stopham and Nutbourne vineyards. If you come from near Alton, you might know Rames and Exton Park and Hattingley Valley, for instance. So, people do tend to know their local ones more often than not, and will, ask for those because a lot of these vineyard shops aren't open all the time.
I notice you don't have, for me, I always think of the four big producers in England, which are Ridgeview, Nye Timber, Chapel Down.
Yeah.
But you don't stock those.
No.
Why's that?
Well, because a lot of those are, available in supermarkets, and we would like to have stuff from smaller producers that, isn't that readily available. Mm-hmm. So, we have had Ridgeview before, and we're going to get it again soon. But
they had some supply issues last year, didn't they?
Yes.
They always keep running out of various things.
Yeah, well, we don't make huge quantities in this country, and if you've got a big customer base, and it's going to go quickly.
Yeah.
It can be difficult to keep up with demand.
How do you decide which wines to stock?
From the ones we taste, really. Mm-hmm. We go to various tastings throughout the year, and we often have people from vineyards coming along, winemakers, and showing their wines. So we can keep up to date, know what we like, generally how we do it. It's the ones we think are good.
Okay. And just, this is a very personal opinion. I'm going to ask two questions. What's your best wine, and what's your best value wine? Because they're not necessarily the same thing. Well, they could be.
It's like asking to choose between your children.
Yeah, no, I realise that because it's just that you've got quite an interesting range.
I choose one, I'm going to,
offend someone else.
Yes, exactly. Well, obviously I'm biased towards my own.
Excluding Hawkins Brothers. you can include that if you think it's really good value.
Sure, but. Yeah. I mean, I love the wines from East Meon, Berry Garden. They're not particularly low price, but they are excellent. They're made by Dermot Sugru over at Whiston. That's only a tiny one-acre vineyard, but we're the only people who have it. I mean, our most reasonably priced wine is the Nutbourne Nutty Wild, which is a natural sparkling wine, zero dosage, very pale rosé from Nutbourne.
When you say natural, you mean natural as in no into
very very yeah very very little intervention, and they use natural yeast, I believe.
Wild fermentation.
I think there's a little bit of control.
And I was going to say, because it'd be pretty hard to get a controlled secondary or wild fermentation on the secondary, unless you do what some people do, which is start the fermentation and almost like a Moscato d'Asti type system where you let the fermentation go and then you close the tank, so to speak, so the pressure builds up towards the end of the fermentation.
Sure.
But and then you get natural petience on natural wines where they've just got no control and it just goes through a secondary fermentation afterwards.
And that's £22 a bottle. So that's sort of the starting point, but an excellent wine.
Yeah.
I mean, all the wines here are good.
And which wine sells the most?
Well, our wine sells the most.
Does it?
Yeah. It's local. People tend to buy what they try.
Mm-hmm.
And
You're always sampling.
We generally have our ours open for to taste.
Yep. Do you make? Is that the one that you've got the best margin on as well?
I don't think it's our best margin. No, but we do okay on it.
As a percentage, or as a
as a percentage.
Yeah, let's just talk about some of the other vineyards you've got there.
Okay, we also have wines from Ambriel down in Gay Street near Nutbourne.
Where's Nutbourne?
Nutbourne is just south of Billingshurst.
No, where's Billingshurst?
Billingshurst in West Sussex.
West Sussex.
Near Pulborough.
No.
West Chiltington.
Okay.
It's right next door to Nightimber.
Near Horsham, Nightimber, all that area.
Absolutely. Gus Bourne from Kent.
They've made a big... They've become quite big, haven't they? They've got a really good reputation. Yeah. They came from nowhere about 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they also have vineyards in West Sussex, in Hanukkah, just near Chichester.
Mm-hmm.
Some quite large vineyards there. We have Hoffman and Rathbone, made by Ulrich Hoffman.
It's a traditional English name, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Great winemaker. Who else haven't I mentioned? Let's have a look on the shelf.
Well, you've got Breaky Bottom, which is probably the most unfortunate name around.
Yeah, but you know, made by the great Peter Hall, one of the old men of the English wine scene. No, not old men. One of the how can I put this in a nice way? Yes, I mean, no, he's one of the great characters of the English wine scene.
Yep.
Peter Hall, you know, his little 5-acre vineyard nestled in the South Downs, just south of Lewes, making great, great award-winning, international award-winning wines.
And just out of curiosity, is your dog named after the bottle, the Digby wine, or is Digby wine named after the dog?
Neither.
Neither?
No. It's Digby. It's named after Sir Kenelm Digby, inventor of the champagne bottle.
Was he an Englishman or something?
He was an Englishman, yes.
Oh, okay. When was that?
17th century, I think, perhaps.
Okay, when England ruled the glass world.
Yes, yeah. Invented the method, the bottle.
The method? What do you mean? Of production.
Yeah, of production, yeah. Who else haven't I mentioned? We've got, of course, Dermot Segrue's own wine, Segrue Pierre, The Trouble with Dreams. Oh, yes, of course, Court Garden from down in Ditchling, made by... lovely Howard and Hugo Corney.
And then you got the Ginking.
Oh, yeah, the Ginking. The Ginking,
not
Ginking.
Ginking. That name just looks awful when you see it on the label. It looks like something out of a bad child's fairy tale.
It's an interesting gap in the market that's been exploited. It's a mixture of gin, sparkling English wine and mineral water.
Okay.
I know it sounds strange, but we sell an awful lot of it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredibly popular.
What percentage is it?
It's only 8%.
8%, so there's not that much gin in it.
No, it's very popular.
I've never even heard of it before.
Yeah, it fills a gap in the market. It's made by the guys at Litmus over at Dorking.
Yeah.
By
Litmus is the guys who make the wines for Denby's.
For Denby's, yes. Yeah, we've also got some wine by them. We have their Noble Harvest dessert wine,
mm-hmm.
and quite a lot of still wines as well from Stopham Estate, Winbury from Norfolk. We've got some lovely wine, Double Hedges from Bedfordshire. Hush Heath, we have wine from as well. I've forgotten to mention them. Lime Bay.
Do you find, like looking at the wines where they're coming from, a lot of people are talking about Norfolk and Suffolk as being sort of quite good places for Bacchus.
Yeah.
I did a tasting for Thanet Wine Society over in Margate last week. 90 people, the biggest wine society in the UK, doing a New Zealand tasting last week. And when I was there... I made the mistake of saying that I thought English viticulture was where New Zealand was 30 years ago. Everybody thought that was a very derisory thing, but in actual fact, I thought it was quite positive because in the late 80s, New Zealand had a product that was profitable and they'd sort of worked out where the best place was.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting the feeling that maybe 10 years ago we found we had a product that was profitable. And now we're starting to get a feel that there are certain regions that are better for certain styles of wines.
Yeah.
And, you know, Suffolk, Norfolk for Bacchus, certainly the southern North and South Downs for Fizz.
Yeah.
Is there any other regions that you think are starting to become known for certain styles or perhaps grape varietals?
Hmm. No, not particularly.
So I mean, it's still early days.
It's still early days. Yeah, I mean, Bacchus is certainly growing in popularity. I think now the number three grape, or maybe number four. Certainly making some delicious Bacchus in this country, and a lot of different styles. You know, sort of the right from the tropical fruity end right down to the lovely grassy end.
Yeah, I always think it's very similar to Sauvignon Blanc, New Zealand Sauvignon
Absolutely,
Blanc.
Yeah.
So you do get a range of styles as well. Okay. All right then, James. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Shame you didn't have anything open to taste.
we have got something open to taste.
What do you got?
I've got some Stop Mistake Pinot Gris 2015 open.
Let's have a wee taste of that. Can we
have
a taste
of that? Let's have a taste. It's our most popular still wine.
Is it?
Yeah, some great Pinot Gris. We have two in the shop at the moment, one from Greyfriars, just 3 miles away, and we've got some from Stopham Estate as well, down just south of Petworth. And we've got some of that. They actually have some of the Stopham open at the moment.
Well, let's have a wee taste.
Yeah, let's have a taste. Look at it. So this is made
It's quite fruity, isn't it? It's nice.
But it has a lovely balance to it, I think. It's got lovely, fresh, crisp acidity to it, which balances it out nicely. I mean, this is made by a guy called Simon Woodhead. He keeps this for a year before releasing it, as he does with all of his wines.
That is good. It's quite rich in the mouth. It's also very ripe on the nose as well, isn't
yeah,
it? So it's gone it through past that sort of pear that you often get with Pinot Gris, and it's just a little bit riper. Is he left it on the vine for quite a long time, has he? Or
yeah, I think so.
What's the alcohol on it?
The alcohol, I think it's 11.5.
Oh, that's quite decent as well. So he's got a fair bit of residual sugar in there.
Yeah.
He's left a fair bit in to balance out the acidity.
Yes. I mean, he's a very, very careful winemaker. I mean,
Where did you say they were from? Sorry? Where did you say Stopham was from?
Stopham is down south of Petworth, between Fittleworth and Pulborough.
No, you might as well just said blah. Start with the county.
West Sussex.
West Sussex, okay.
Yeah.
Near Horsham, then.
It's not that near Horsham. It's much nearer Petworth, really. There aren't really any. Petworth would be the... Billingshurst, yes, what am I saying? Billingshurst.
No, it still doesn't.
south of Billingshurst and Petworth.
Okay, all right, but we're Sussex.
Yeah, down in the depths of Sussex. Yeah,
okay.
There's something nasty in the woodshed.
And what does that retail for?
That one is £16 a bottle.
Okay, so it is quite gutsy price.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what you expect with English
wines. Yeah, we can't make cheap wine in this country.
Yeah, it is quite nice, though. But I had a New Zealand Pinot Gris recently, and it was nicely balanced as well. But this is standing up quite nicely compared to that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, nice. Excellent. All right then, James, I think we'll wrap it up there. Okay then, James, thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris.
Cheers.
Good to meet you.